In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Friday, as I said, Friday, the 1st of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Brexit plus 8 is where we are. And I guess I'm going to stop saying it that way now, because that is pretty much the status quo from now on until who knows when, really, what with political paralysis over in the UK. With political paralysis, however, come economic unknowns. And the economy really hates that. So that is where we're going to start today. Neela Richardson is at Redfin. Sudeep Reddy is at the Wall Street Journal. They are both in our bureau in Washington, D.C. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let's start with you. And the question is, well, there are many questions, actually, with Brexit. The first one is, you know, we had a story yesterday about how this could conceivably turn into a regional issue, remain a regional issue, rather than a wider global thing. Thoughts?
Too soon to tell. Yeah. We look at the U.S. stock market. We saw the big dip on Friday, the worst on record, and the quick rebound. But I would have to say that the U.S. stock market is more like a thermometer. Mm-hmm. And what we need for this diagnosis is an MRI. And the real pain points are going to bleed not through stocks, but through currencies, which are still wacky. Yeah. It's sending a lot of money looking for safety in U.S. treasuries. And that leads to a strong dollar, which really hurts U.S. corporate earnings in the long run, because it limits trades and exports. So all of this is circular. There's no regions really in the world anymore. We're all interconnected.
Interesting. So Sudeep, you know, I'm pulling up the dollar British pound trade right here on my computer. It's $1.33, which is basically where it was after the vote. So the currency markets haven't recovered, even though stocks have. Your thoughts on the wider issue?
It's certainly clear that the currency markets are showing, and other markets are showing, that the how this problem will radiate. It will hit the UK economy first. It will spread to the Eurozone economy. It will bleed through the rest, US, China, everywhere else in the world. But we are treating this more like an immediate shock that's going to hit us all at once. This feels a lot more like a 2007 moment than a 2008 moment, where
have to make that comparison, you've already lost.
but when you can see the fractures, you can see the cracks, there are things you can do to prevent it from getting a lot worse. And at least knowing that there are steps that you can take to prevent it from getting a lot worse, that's a good thing, that we know there are ways to prevent this from becoming a mass global crisis in a way that we experienced in 2008.
Okay, so fair enough, and I get that. But Neela, what does it say that with the political paralysis over there, the only person, and we talked about this yesterday, the only person who can and is doing anything is Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England. Once again, central bankers to the rescue.
Right. And unlike 2008, if we're going to make comparisons, this is not a financial crisis.
Yeah,
this is a democratic political crisis. And we're seeing a little bit of that sentiment over here in the United States. So a central banker can't fix this problem. They can put their finger in the dam. They can stem the tide. They can use whatever analogy you want. But at the end of the day, it's about votes and policy.
Those are all good points. Okay. Change of gears. Our political election and the issue of trade and economics. Sudeep, Donald Trump gave a speech on Tuesday or Wednesday, the one standing in front of the compressed garbage and recycling stuff. Hillary Clinton gave one a week ago. There were elements of both, speaking specifically about trade, which were pretty much interchangeable. There's a whole pull up the drawbridge moment happening here.
There is. There's a global baton being passed around the world, a backlash against globalization, a turn toward nationalism. Everybody realizes what the political winds are. And obviously, in a heated political contest, you're going to see both candidates try to grab at some of it. Donald Trump has obviously grabbed at it a whole lot more in pledging to blow up the whole system. It is fitting that a candidate who grew out of the Tea Party movement is now talking longingly about 18th century economic policy for the United States and tariffs, and wanting to go back to how it was back then. It is a little odd to have that discussion in an era of globalization where you can move information across the world in seconds instead of weeks. That's all. I don't think we've fully come to terms with the fact that we're talking about 18th century economic policy right now as a solution to where we are. But that's where we are.
What does it say, though, Neela, that that message resonates, right? 17th and 18th century economics resonates in a time when people are not feeling the benefits of globalization.
It says exactly that. Globalization has not been equally felt. And one of the missteps of policymakers I don't know if it's since the 18th century city, but it's been for a while that they have been unconscious to the problems of the working right. class and the middle class. And that is not regional. That's everywhere. And so the globalization has helped companies. It's helped technology. It's had all these great benefits, but they haven't trickled all over the place. And that's what workers are rebelling against in different ways around the world.
All right, we got to go. 130 days till Election Day, by the way, plus or minus a couple. Neela Richardson at Redfin, Sudeep Reddy at the Wall Street Journal. Got him in Washington. Thanks, you two.
Thanks,
Happy 4th of July.